I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
It's time for the VolQuest podcast, where we dissect the biggest news items of the week. Hey, good Tuesday morning, everybody. Welcome to the VolQuest podcast. I am Eric Kane, alongside Austin Price, Brent Hubbs, and Rob Lewis. A big thank you to our friends Exterior Home Solutions for bringing us coverage of this podcast. For a free estimate, you can pick up the phone today and call them at 865-524-5888 or online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. If you need roofing adjustment, you need to put a new roof on, you need upgrades to your home, siding, windows, repairs, whatever the case may be, they've got you. That is Exterior Home Solutions. We got a lot to get into here today, but obviously spring football on the docket, some recruiting. But Rob Lewis, Tennessee basketball, Sweet 16 bound for the 10th time in program history. The second time ever it's been back-to-back years of the Sweet 16 for Tennessee. And it wasn't pretty, but it doesn't matter. Survive in advance, and Tennessee's moving on to play Creighton in the nightcap on Friday.
Yeah, the nightcap, for sure. Everybody, get your Red Bulls handy. But, man, you know, Eric, you said it best. I mean, I am sure the general's quarters was a mess in the second half on from Saturday night. But it doesn't matter. I mean, there's 16 teams playing college basketball right now, are playing, you know, whose seasons are still alive, and Tennessee's one of them. And it doesn't matter how you got there or what it looked like. All that matters is that, you know, Tennessee's still practicing today. They're going to get on an airplane, you know, Wednesday, fly to Detroit. And as you said, only the second time in the history of this program that it's happened in back-to-back years. And that's significant.
Rob, when you look at this team, what do you – are we at the point where you just don't make anything out of anything, right? It's just on to the next one. Is that kind of the bottom line deal, or are you looking for, you know, are you looking for specific trends or things coming out of a game, or do you think, hey, you won that weekend, now you go try to win the next weekend, and they're completely separate of each other?
Man, that's how I think, Brent. And I'm not saying that there's no carryover, that you don't want to get hot and get some momentum. But I really don't. And you know, Brent, me and you've done this together. I mean, it really does, you know, change gears. I mean, when you go from Columbus, Ohio to San Antonio, I mean, it's a different tournament. I mean, I'm not saying that you don't, you know, maybe keep, if you're in a groove, that some of that doesn't stay in. But it really, every weekend is and you know, coaches look at it the same way. It's a different tournament. And so, you know, I Coach Barnes, and I think a lot of coaches use the same euphemism. He was just like, you know, our goal is to win the Charlotte Invitational. Now we want to go win, you know, a four-team tournament in Detroit. And I really think that each, you know, little pod is its own, you know, self-contained drama. And, you know, Tennessee did what they had to do. They got through Charlotte, and now it's a whole new storyline.
Rob, don't you think that this next one's the hardest one? I mean, only one Tennessee basketball team has made an Elite Eight, so I mean, like, you're getting into rarefied air if you can win this next one, right, amongst, you know, the teams in Tennessee basketball history. It just feels like this next one is the biggest hurdle to climb, more so than the Elite Eight trying to get to a Final Four for the first time in school history, because you've only been to one Elite Eight.
Yeah, but I mean, for these guys, though, I don't think they think like that. I mean, I don't think Dalton Connect is like, man, Tennessee's only been to one Elite Eight. I mean, I think he's thinking, I want to go to the Elite Eight. You know, I don't think those kids carry that baggage. You know, maybe for, you know, the coaches or administrators, but I just think at this level, every one of them's hard. I mean, it's going to be a hard matchup with Creighton. You know, kind of a clash in styles, or at least, you know, before having gotten knee deep into the matchup, it looks like it's going to be a clash of styles with a team that really likes to shoot, you know, the three ball. So, I'm just not sure, AP, how much the mental stuff weighs on these kids. I mean, I for the fan base, I mean, they carry it around for sure, like a 1,000-pound gorilla on their back. But, you know, again, I don't know, the Zakai Zeiler, you know, Friday afternoon is thinking, man, Tennessee's only been to one Elite Eight. I don't know that they process the stuff like that. But I think there's pressure. Don't get me wrong, for sure. But I don't think they're feeling the pressure because of what Tennessee's program has done. I think it's all, you know, coming from within because they want to get the Elite Eight. They want to get to the Final Four.
Rob, I mentioned that it wasn't pretty. It doesn't matter. You just move on. And that's still true. But, you know, parts of Tennessee's game was pretty. That defense, which Rick Barnes prides himself on, every team here at Tennessee's played good defense. And, you know, it's a top three defense all year long, pretty much. It did play well. It held Texas at 36%. It won the rebounding battle, forced more turnovers, points off turnovers, and, you know, resulted in, you know, scoring more points in the paint and so on and so forth. But can Tennessee beat Creighton shooting 34% and 12%? I mean, I think more so than anything, you cannot afford to shoot 12% from beyond the arc again, right?
No, I don't think there's any question. And Hubbard, I mean, I was banging my head about it or making noise about it, but Hubbard actually went and found this stat. And we don't know for sure if it's true, but Hubbard dug it up on Twitter on some deep dive that, and I don't know, we can't vouch for the research, but I love the stat so much I'm going to throw it out there. Hubbard, what was it that there had been 66 games before Saturday night where a team shot less than 35% overall and less than 15% from the floor in the NCAA tournament. And those teams were 0-66. And now they're 1-66. So my point, I know Tennessee can't shoot that good again, shoot that way again and win a game. It's only happened once in the history of the tournament. And I don't think they will. I mean, just, you know, from statistically speaking, I mean, I think that's an outlier. I mean, if you just shot 3-for-25 from three, I think the chances of you performing that badly again the next time out are pretty astronomical. And we'll see. But short answer, no, you can't shoot like that and win. And no, I wouldn't expect them to shoot like that again.
This is from Tennessee. Tennessee became the second team ever to win an NCAA tournament game while shooting under 34% from the floor and under 12.5% from three-point range. So that percentage went from 15 to 12.5, but only the second team ever. So regardless, I mean, it is rare air.
We're talking historical.
Historical. And Brandon, if Tennessee wants to, beat Creighton on Friday night, obviously you got to shoot a little bit better. But you need to continue to play defense and do a lot of what you did in this game because, again, it was good enough to win a game in the second round, and it's been good enough to win a whole lot of games for a whole lot of years for Rick Barnes.
Well, I mean, you've got to score points, and every game takes on its own different life. But your defense has to travel. And – you know, Tennessee couldn't score points against Mississippi State in the SEC tournament, and their defense faltered as a result of it. I think the most impressive thing, as ugly as the game might have been on Saturday, is Rob, their defense did not slack off when the offense was just non-existent, the way it was really in the first half in particular for Tennessee. They never let their offensive struggles affect their defensive intensity on the other end, which was a mature thing because, I mean, it did affect him at Texas A&M in the SEC tournament. Now, I'm not sure their focus was where it was supposed to be in the SEC tournament versus the NCAA, but it says something about the fact they can play at that level on defense when their offense was struggling the way it is. You can't play like that through the whole tournament, but sometimes you got to win one ugly, right, where things don't go well. You got to hang your hat on something, and Tennessee was able to hang their hat on their defense.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds cliche. I mean, we talk about it on here. I mean, Coach Barnes talks about it. But, man, that's really true. It is hard to keep playing defense when you just can't buy a bucket. I mean, the offense is fun. I mean, you know, when you're a kid and you fall in love with basketball, chances are you fell in love with it because offense is fun. It's fun to make shots. You know, it's fun to get out and run. I mean, defense is not fun when you're a kid. And you find out later on, you know, if you like to win, defense is pretty important. And it takes a lot of mental toughness and character to keep playing that hard on that end of the floor when it's such a struggle offensively. And I just think, you know, people really need to appreciate, you know, what Tennessee did and being able to win that game when they were just so bad offensively. And that's really the first thing Coach Barnes talked about, you know, post game. I mean, the first thing out of his mouth is the opening statement. He's like, man, you know, and he's been around. He's like, you know, this is one of those, you shoot it like that in this tournament, you know, usually you get sent home. And it's, you know, tip of the cap to my kids for, you know, making sure that didn't happen tonight. You know, Rick knew it better than any of us that, yeah, you make 3 3-pointers out of 25 in the second round, you're probably not going on. And they did. And I think everybody, you know, in that locker room probably felt like they dodged one, and they dodged one because of their defense.
But a reason you have confidence also moving forward is because you have Dalton Kincaid, because you have a guy like Zakai Ziegler that can change a whole lot of things up. I mean, this is a different team that is going on to the Sweet 16 than it was a season ago, whereas you didn't have that true number one, got to get a bucket, he's going to go and find it. Obviously a player that's played at a national player of the year type, you know, caliber all season long, but you're also healthy. And, you know, despite the poor shooting performance, you should still have a whole lot of confidence that Tennessee can find the bottom of the net, you know, on a more than just an occasion moving on in the tournament.
Yeah. I mean, this is a team that, are led by two guys that I think have basically a short memory. Like, you know, okay, we didn't shoot it great. It's one game, flush it. New venue, new sight lines, new week, new opponent. And so I don't think that they'll be fazed by any of this. I still think that, you know, you need, you know, you love the trio, right? Adu, Ziegler, and the Kincaid. You still need somebody. Is it Joe? I mean, he had a huge clutch corner three the other night when he hadn't really done anything the whole game. Is it Santi? Is it Jordan Ganey? Is it Mayshak? Who is it that kind of, you know, is it Awaka? You know, I mean, he played really well, you know, the other night in his limited minutes when he wasn't in foul trouble. So, you know, I just feel like this next game, you know, I think it's a good matchup for Tennessee. You know, if Creighton just doesn't just shoot the lights out and Tennessee's able to rotate defensively and be in position.
Hey, Rob, go ahead, Rob.
I was just going to say one thing. AP, you touched on Adu and kind of what's become Tennessee's big threes the season's worn on. And everybody knows I'm a huge Jonas Adu fan and give him tons of credit for, you know, Tennessee being where they are because of his development. But, man, he can't miss the bunnies. He cannot –
I agree.
He cannot miss the button. I mean, that when he in a game like Tennessee was in the other night, and like they're going to be in if they survive. I mean, two or three possessions here that you can't miss the bunnies. And golly, man, he missed at least two. Maybe that were not. I would say not very high degree of difficulty for a 7-footer. And I mean, that's going to cost them.
I just wonder. I mean, you know, a year ago it was, you know, played lights out against Duke in the second round, and then in the Sweet 16 against FAU, you couldn't hit the broadside of the barn. I just wonder if it flips this year. If you got lucky because Texas couldn't hit the broadside of the barn either, and then you end up playing really well against Creighton. I just don't expect them to play the same. I expect them to bounce back. Do they win? I don't know, because Creighton can shoot it. But I don't expect Tennessee to put up the same performance offensively they did against Creighton.
Rob, let me ask you this. I mean, Tennessee's got like 9 million people on the bench scouting and putting things together, but Kim English has played Creighton twice.
Beat them twice.
And they've beaten them twice. Is that a thing, or is it Tennessee's their own team? I mean, I know Rick Barnes and Kim English are good friends. Kim English came to Knoxville, watched Tennessee play this year. Is that an aid to Tennessee, or is that an overblown storyline that some people will put out there, because Tennessee's got every resource under the in the world to prepare for Creighton?
I mean, I wouldn't make a huge deal out of it, but I think it'll be a nice little, you know, feather. I mean, certainly, I mean, as you say, they have a million, you know, people that, you know, that can put in man hours breaking down video and whatever, but I don't, you know, it's still, I think being able to pick up the phone while you're watching that video and, you know, calling Kim and saying, hey, you know, how did you guys, you know, defend this, or what did you do with this? I mean, it may be a little thing, but it might be something that steals you possession, you know, in a game, and in the Sweet 16, that could be, you know, that might mean something. I'm just, I don't want to say it's like one of the biggest keys of the game, but I bet you Rick Barnes is glad Kim English played him twice this year. That's a resource.
It's got to be a help. I mean, how big of a help it is. I mean, obviously, it's a guy that you call. Creighton's an interesting team. They don't have much of a bench, Rob. They don't play deep, but they don't foul. I mean, like, they play without fouling, which seems kind of crazy to me. I mean, can you attack them and really get to the rim against them, or is there enough rim protection without fouling? I think that's an important or an intriguing part of this matchup.
Well, the big kid, his name escapes me. I mean, he's not the most athletic guy, but, man, he's pretty solid, you know, rim protector. You know, I think Jonas matches up pretty well with him. But, you know, I think the point you make about them fouling Hubbard is a pretty good one. And man, they're pretty solid defensively, but they, you know, they're not UConn or anything, but I was looking kind of just, you know, getting ready to do the deep dive last night. And I think they give up like 66 points a game on the year. And that's not a result of, you know, pace of play, because they want to get up, you know, they want to get up and down. I mean, pretty high, you know, they're not loyal to Marymount, but I mean, it's a pretty high possession game. They're not holding opponents under 70 because, you know, they're playing a half court style. So that's one thing that I don't think Tennessee will have to worry about. And I think we can all agree Tennessee's been better when they haven't gotten in one of these bogged down half court games, like, you know, Vanderbilt did to them, Texas A&M did to them, South Carolina did to them when they beat them in Knoxville. So I think that plays the Tennessee's advantage, but man, they're going to have to guard the perimeter. Creighton shot almost 1,000 three-pointers this year. I mean, they are not afraid. They led the Big East in makes. They make almost a dozen a game. So to your Eric's earlier point, yeah, Tennessee better make more than three threes in this game, or they're going to be at a big disadvantage.
My key to this game is, yeah, Creighton's going to shoot the three, Rob, but Tennessee's got to do a really good job of keeping them off the offensive boards, giving them extended possessions, giving them second and third looks. You know, you go back to early in the year, some of those teams that gave Tennessee fits were the hungrier team on the glass, especially on the offensive glass. So that to me is a big key in this game, is not, because when you miss threes, that the ball is going to normally bounce pretty wide. You've got to be able to go get it and be aggressive.
Rob, you went into it a moment, you know, ago right there, just talking about the three-pointers and the efficiency and all that, the volume that they've shot. Tennessee was a popular Final Four pick when people were filling out their brackets, obviously, but a lot of times they didn't have Tennessee going deep. They had Tennessee losing this game to Creighton. Any other reason why Creighton would be a pick here over Tennessee in this basketball game for the average fan?
I think for the average fan, I mean, this, don't sugarcoat it. I mean, they look at Tennessee and specifically Rick Barnes' success in March, and they have questions. You know, we'll see. I mean, I think this team is built to do this. I mean, I think they're built to win this game and to play, you know, for a chance to go to the Final Four. I mean, I don't think it's going to be a personnel issue. I mean, I think Jemai Mashak had a great quote about it, and I used it. Somebody may have read it Saturday night, and I was asking him in the locker room afterwards, like, man, does this feel different this year? I mean, you were in the exact same spot a year ago, except we were in Orlando. You just beaten Duke. You were going to the Sweet 16, you know, but does this feel different? Jamal was like, yeah, man, I mean, this feels a lot different. I mean, and he looked over, he's like, you know, we got Zakai's healthy. We got Dalton Connect, you know, sitting over there. He's like, this, you know, we feel like we're hitting on all cylinders right now. And, you know, and he didn't come out and say it, but last year, I mean, it was a grind. I mean, getting to the Sweet 16 was a grind. Once Zakai went down, I mean, everything was hard once Zakai went down. And it's, you know, this team's just built different. And getting to the Sweet 16 for this team was the expectation. And maybe even, you know, to win one more is the expectation. Whereas last year, it didn't feel that way. Like, beating Duke was like, whew, you know, big sigh.
Yeah,
you know, we just accomplished. It doesn't feel like they've accomplished anything huge right now to me. And maybe I don't mean that as a negative or be critical. To me, what they've done right now is what they should have, what they're capable of doing.
Yeah, and what's funny about this time of year is perceptions just become such a reality, right? So everybody forgets. Really, Tennessee was a heck of an achievement to get to the Sweet 16, but because they were playing a 9 seed.
Yeah.
It was a choke that they didn't get to the Elite Eight. Much the way this year, a lot of people have Creighton winning this game because Tennessee was a bad defensive team because of what Kentucky did in Knoxville in the regular season finale and what Texas A&M did to Tennessee. Suddenly, Tennessee was a bad defensive team because of those last two games, when in reality, they've been a good defensive team all year long. It's just funny to me how perception – takes on its own life, right, Rob? I mean, McNeese was a popular pick, and then you go look at who they played, and you're like, why would anybody have picked them to win that game, right? I mean, like, there was nothing about their schedule that said they could play in advance in this tournament, yet some people were talking about them on the selection shows about, you know, that's a sleeper Sweet 16 pick and all this other stuff. It's just funny how perception takes on a life of its own when you do this many hours of coverage and this much talking about the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, I don't disagree at all. And I thought, you know, I made a snarky tweet about it. Maybe some people, you know, actually saw it happen.
Yeah.
But I thought a great example, Hubber, what you're talking about is after, you know, Saturday night, late night, and I'm up late, I'm still writing, and, you know, CBS or TBS or whoever's doing it, but Seth Davis and is talking about Tennessee, and he's talking about playing Creighton, and Seth is harping on, man, you know, Tennessee just, you know, they shot this, they shot that, you know, blah, blah, they're going to, boy, they're going to have to do a lot better than that, or they've got no shot against Creighton. Meanwhile, 5 minutes earlier, Creighton had just been taken to overtime by the 11 seed, you know, in their region. And if Oregon could have made a front end of a 1-1, Creighton would have lost. And meanwhile, you flip to Jay Wright, and they ask him the same thing about Tennessee. And the guy who's won two national titles and, you know, been to however many Final Fours is like, man, haven't been there. When you shoot it like that in this tournament and you still get out of there with a win, I can't tell you what that does for your confidence. Watch out for Tennessee. I mean, just two totally, you know, couldn't be more different. Yep. And, you know, and the one guy, you know, went to Duke and his dad was Bill Clinton's lawyer. And the other guy, you know, has 800 victories.
Yeah. Well, so, and I mean, again, it's because there's so much talking about it, the perception just kind of takes on a life of its own. Which is kind of crazy. My last thing to you, Rob, before I get out of some of the basketball talk, is: are you? I guess you're not surprised, but I mean, we talk about each tournament, each pod, each weekend being different. This whole tournament's different. I mean, it's been battle ball, like just beat everybody up, just kind of totally let them go play, right? I mean, it's such a different style of game in the NCAA tournament than it is in the regular season in any league anywhere when you watch games, or it feels that way to me. Is that right or not?
I probably didn't watch as much as you did of everything, Hubbard, at least on game day. But I, from the small sample size that I have seen, or not small sample size, but what I have seen, you know, outside of this Tennessee, I wouldn't disagree with that. I mean, I think it looks physical, and I don't think you see a lot of coaches complaining about it. You know, personally, I mean, I don't know that I go so far as to say that they're swallowing their whistles, but I mean, Tennessee and Texas, well, I mean, those are two physical basketball teams. I mean, they got big dudes, they got, you know, big guys inside. And I mean, I don't think either, Tope was in foul trouble, but I think he came back pretty honestly from where I was sitting, as he often does. And you know, I don't think either coach had a big problem with the way that game was officiated.
VolQuest.com will have you covered in Detroit for the Sweet 16. There's going to be a media availability on campus on Wednesday before the team departs. And, of course, a media availability early Thursday afternoon. And then that'll have to tide you over, because in well over 24 hours after that media availability, that's when Tennessee will tip off about an hour and a half before the midnight clock strikes. But nonetheless, Tennessee and Creighton Sweet 16 coming up on Friday night. Rob Lewis and Grant Ramey will have you covered, and Prime Video will have you covered as well. You need to sneak in those tournament games while you're at work. Prime Video has got you covered. Watch every game live on your phone, on your laptop. Relax and watch at home on Prime Video with a subscription. Prime Video gives you choices to add on channels like Paramount Plus and Max, both featuring NCAA tournament games all in one place. It's March, it's Madness. Stream it all on Prime Video. So go ahead and check that out over on Prime Video. And if you have a Max subscription, it's there as well. I watched the ending to A&M in Houston the other night on my Max subscription, and you can too. Big thanks to our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions for making all this coverage possible. Let's get a quick word from them, and then we'll come back and talk a little spring football.
Severe weather can strike at any time in East Tennessee, and Mother Nature can do severe damage to the first and most important line of defense that you and your family have against Mother Nature, and that is your roof. Whenever she strikes, make sure that you call the people that I call. Make sure you trust the people that I trust, and that's my friends at Exterior Home Solutions, because they're more than friends, they're truly family.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
A huge thank you to our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions for being the presenting sponsor of the VolQuest podcast. Great people, big Tennessee fans, and they can help you as well. Local and trusted since 1999. That is Exterior Home Solutions. A lot of basketball talk. We'll get to recruiting here in a moment, but entering week number two with spring football, Brent Hubbs, and they've got 5 practices in the books already, 2 full padded practices, and tomorrow is a major day for the first scrimmage that'll happen over at Neyland Stadium.
Yeah, and we'll see what comes out of that and sort of, again, I think this is more about where's your depth, who can help you, and who can't help you. And to me, Austin, when you look at the first couple of weeks, that's the thing that you're trying to figure out. It's not, you're not labeling anybody a starter. You're also not going to the extreme of, boy, this guy can't help him, or this guy's going to, you know, he's going to take off and run with it. But you are trying to get a feel for what you think this team has beyond the knowns. And we know what they are on the defensive front, right? I mean, we know what they are in certain spots. But there's some unknowns with this team that starts to take its shape with this scrimmage on Wednesday. What are you looking for?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, looking for, you know, some playmakers on the outside. You'd love to hear that you know, some of these young athletes have made some plays at wide receiver. I want to continue to hear good things about Dante Thornton. I want to continue to hear, you know, some flash from some of those young kids, Chris Brazel. You know, and honestly, I'd love to hear good things about linebacker and the secondary as well.
I think the one position group you didn't mention right there, Austin, unless I just missed it, and this is something that I'm looking for, these running backs, right? I mean, Cam Seldon's not going to play. You better not play a whole lot of Dylan Sampson. Deshaun Bishop, what do you got? You know, Khalifa Keith, what do you got? Peyton Lewis isn't going to be playing. You know, Tennessee needs to create some depth there at running back. And kind of on that note, because of how great the defensive line is and experience, this offensive line that's got some experience, but kind of, you know, plug and play here in spring at the guard positions, and you got a new tackle and you're flipping a tackle over, and I'm sure Cooper May isn't going to play in the center spot. How much sustainability can you have offensively on Wednesday to give those running backs a chance, to give Nico a chance to get out there to the playmakers? Because you have such a stout defensive front and front seven, I think it's a great opportunity and a hard, you know, showcase at least for some of those young guys that haven't played an awful lot or might be playing in different spots here in scrimmage number one.
Well, I think this is a fascinating decision that coaches have to make. You know, when you think about this and you look at it, we talk about Cooper not practicing or not scrimmaging very much. Okay, they're young at the guard spot. But how much, Austin, do you throw Amari Thomas out there? Omar Norman Lott. Now, we know how Rodney is, right? We know what Rodney's – how he's going to go. Those guys are going to get some run. But how cautious are you of them versus, hey, Hobbs needs as much as he can get, right? The Moy kid who's transferred in needs as many reps as he can get there. We need to push the tank on Elijah Simmons as much as he can. So how much do you sort of take that big three or four, Eason, Omar Norman Lott, and Amari Thomas, and say, hey, get a series or two and let's get you out and start to work on some other guys? I think how much some of those veteran guys go is going to be pretty fascinating to view, not just in this scrimmage, but throughout the remainder of spring when you get into 11-on-11 work.
Well, I just don't think Rodney looks at it from a standpoint of, like, several of those guys have – like, I don't think he looks at Bryson Eason as having arrived. You know, like, I think he's going to put him out there as much as anybody. Mm-hmm. You know, same thing with Elijah Simmons, you know, Omar Norman Lott. You know, I mean, you know, honestly, Big O's probably the one guy that I think, you know, probably – they would feel comfortable, you know, kind of just resting. But, I mean, you know he's going to play some. So, you know, I think Rodney – I don't think if Rodney's afraid to take the foot off because it'll make them feel like they've arrived. And he never wants them to feel that way. You know what I mean?
That was pretty clear in his media setting on Saturday, wasn't Eric? Wasn't it, Eric? I mean, it was pretty clear that don't act like we're any good. I mean, you know, I like my room, I like my culture, but don't act like we've done anything to this point. So with that being the case, I think it will be a challenge for the offensive line. And You know, I think the running back, I think you're making a great point on the running back eval. So you got to see where you're at, right? I mean, because what do you look like if you lose one of your top two running backs for any extended period of time? You know, and what do you have? You know, do you feel like that you know, Khalif Keith can do something, and can Deshaun? I mean, this is a huge opportunity for those guys, right?
No, it certainly is. And, you know, Deshaun had a really good spring last year as an early enrollee, and he was honestly having a pretty decent fall camp. I'm not saying that he would have had a role in that running back room because it was already pretty stuffed to the brim, but Deshaun has practiced really well when healthy, and I think this is going to be a great opportunity to go and showcase that, because you're exactly right. I mean, you've got so much experience gone from the roster now in Jalen Wright and Jabari Small. Dylan Sampson, you like him, but he's going to be your bell cow now, essentially. Cam Seldon is going to be, you know, second fiddle to him, but he's still very raw at the position. What if one of those guys or both of those guys go down? It's just a lot of inexperience there, so it's going to be a great opportunity for those guys. One other thing I'll have on Rodney Gardner, it just made me think of it when you were talking. It's just how he is, old school. He's a veteran. He obviously knows what he's doing, and I think he likes his group, and he likes the talent there and everything. But he's never going to let them kind of know that. I mean, he loves them. He's going to congratulate him. He's going to love them up off the field and everything. But, like, he's never going to, even if he thinks, like, man, you know, we got probably a top two or three unit in the league or whatever. I like what I got. I mean, he's always going to, because nobody is ever perfect, and he's going to coach that way, saying, well, yeah, you did this well, but you did this wrong. There's not that many coaches like that anymore. And he's you know, few and far between nowadays. So I think that a lot of those veterans will play in the scrimmage, whereas some other positions, like we said, Cooper Mays, I bet Keenan Peely won't get a whole lot of run. He might get some, but I bet he won't get a whole lot of run. You know, some of these receivers probably won't go. Of course, like Brew McCoy is not going to play, but it's going to be interesting to see who's out there and who can take advantage of those opportunities, because I like to call this, you know, the Thursday following the scrimmage number one moving day. You'll have guys that'll go up from second team to first team, or third team to second team, or whatever, because it's just it's a great opportunity there with a whole lot of live action.
Agreed. I agree. I think, you know, it's a real opportunity for several players that either have done just a little and flashed, or this is their first real run with the 1/2s. You know, I mean, like a guy like Sham Umarov, like this is a real opportunity for a guy like Shane. You know, this is a real opportunity for Ethan Davis. This is a real opportunity for, you know, Ricky Gibson, you know, Andre Turrentine. You know, some of those guys played a little bit last year, but not as the full-fledged guy. And so this is a real opportunity for those guys to kind of, you know, I won't say cement themselves, because I don't think that's accurate in spring ball, but definitely lay the foundation.
Well, and I think it's also a opportunity for a wake-up call for somebody too, right? Like, some of those guys probably think they're further along than what they are. It's different when you're in the stadium and the coaches are all on the sideline, and you're going at the breakneck pace that you want to go at, and, you know, it's chaotic, right? And so this is an opportunity for those guys to kind of get a true feel for where they are, right? And so I think it's number one of what they have, three this spring. I know they scrimmage a lot, you know, in situational stuff, kind of every day on the practice field, but probably going three major scrimmages, with the last one being the spring game that doesn't count. So you really have two major scrimmages to kind of show yourself here. And this is number one. So this is a real opportunity for a lot of guys. I think it's a huge scrimmage for Holden Stays. Where is he at knowing this offense? You mentioned Ethan Davis. AP, I would put him in that category. It's a big scrimmage for that entire tight end position group. And then I look at individuals like Sham, Aiden Bustle. You know, where are those guys on the offensive line? We know Hurd's going to be their left tackle. We know Campbell's going to be their right tackle. That's pretty clear. Do they have a backup center, right? I mean, this is a big scrimmage for a guy like Bison Lang. Where is he at in his ability to play the center position for Tennessee? Because you got to come out of spring, AP, with an answer at center, at backup center, right?
Right now, I think their backup center is Dane Davis.
Yep, I would agree.
Maybe. I mean, but you have to know coming out who your backup center is. I don't think they did a year ago. I think they were hoping it was going to be Addison Nichols, but I don't think they knew. And I think based on what happened to him last year, you got to come out of spring knowing if we have an injury in week one or week two, this is where we're going. And I don't know that they had that answer at the end of spring practice last year.
AP, you've had this safety net with Jerome Carvin, with Ollie Lane, with Dane Davis a little bit. Say you leave spring and Bison Lane, William Satterwhite, whoever, just you don't feel good about it. Say you give him opportunities early in camp, you don't feel good about it. And say that truly, Dane Davis, if something were to happen, he would slide down because he's your most experienced guy. Man, I mean, it's like Dane Davis ain't going to be on the roster in 2025. I mean, you got to go portaling, right? I mean, you're to a point to where you've got to find somebody and develop somebody because Cooper Mays, Dane Davis, Ollie Lane's already off the roster. I mean, they're all about to leave.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to start pushing some of these high school guys into some key roles. You know, either that or just abandon high school recruiting and recruit portal guys on. I mean, you know, so I mean, like, I do think it's a big spring. Even if you said, okay, Dane's gonna be my just ultimate, Swiss Army knife guy, you still got to find some guys that are like that for the future.
AP, let me ask you this, and Eric, answer this too, because Buzz, you write observation there. You guys we've all been at what little practices we get to see. Give me the one or two things that you feel like you've learned about this team that you didn't know before spring practice started. Big picture, small picture. Give me a nugget or two that you think they're this, and I wasn't sure they were this.
I'll go. They're more athletic in the secondary than what they were, in my opinion, and because they forced a bunch of those guys. They didn't force everybody, but because some of those guys left and some other guys were encouraged to leave, it's a new look secondary. And there's just a lot of new blood in there that's going to play this fall.
I was going to say, I like what I saw from the secondary as well. It just, again, from what little we get to see, it just looks quicker. It just looks faster, more athletic. I'll say this about the wide receivers. We know the talent that's been there, and we'll see how they produce in scrimmages and whatnot. But, I mean, I've been really impressed from what I've seen from Dante Thornton and little we've been out there. Been really impressed from what I've seen from Caleb Webb. I mean, those guys are further along in the system, some of these new guys. We've talked about Braylon Staley standing out. But, some of these veteran guys that you're not really mentioning their names much anymore when you talk about the Brews, the Squirrels, the Chris Brazels coming in, the Mike Matthews, the Braylon Staley's. I've been impressed with this veteran group of wide receivers, and I think this is something that's going to carry on over into fall, to fall camp, to where it's going to be a real battle out there, and we'll see kind of how big that rotation is. I guess what I'm trying to say is I've been impressed with the veteran afterthoughts at receivers right now because I think they've had a pretty good spring so far.
Here's the interesting thing for me, and I don't know this. I want to be careful not to overhype something, but it feels like they have a chance to have hit pretty well again in the portal, and there's so much talk, Austin, about Tennessee's late in the portal. What's Tennessee doing in the portal? Why aren't they doing anything in the portal in early December? And there's the gnashing of the teeth because there's this former four-star that's in the portal or this former this, and Tennessee doesn't seem to be doing anything type deal. And I want to be careful because I don't know that they've hit, but boy, there's some positive feelings about Jacoby Thomas and McCoy and Stays and Hurd, even, Moy from Stanford. It feels like they have a chance that their portal movement is a real roster upgrade. I think it's too early to declare that, but boy, it feels like it's got a chance to be that way to me. I don't know if that's right or not. Maybe that's me, just seeing new faces and they're more mature bodies and you get like, okay, that guy can play, but it feels like they've done okay in the portal.
Hubs like Fox and CNN calling the election at 8:02 after the polls close. I'm with you. I'm just playing. Everything you just said, I agree with. It certainly feels that way. It feels like they have put themselves into the position to have landed some guys that are going to be a real impactful on this football team this fall. Again, really it appears to be really solid work in the portal again. I think it's interesting, everybody says, you want the last visit, you want, first visit. you know, with this particular group of guys, honestly, if you look at it, McCoy, Stays, Hurd, Brazel, they all went and took other visits after they ended up, after they came here and still ended up picking Tennessee. I found that interesting because sometimes, you know, when they get away from you, you're like, oh, I got no shot now. And it just, you know, with this group, for whatever reason, they kept coming back to Tennessee.
Don't you think NIL changes that vibe, though, in terms of whether you need the first one or the last one? Because the NIL world can be the neutralizer, right? Like, you could be quote, late to the party, but get yourself in the party with an NIL deal, you know, or you can be first to the party, and if you're not where you need to be NIL-wise, you can get thrown out of the club, right? You can get sent outside of the parking lot in a hurry. Do you think for transfer kids that the NIL factor kind of outweighs whether you're first or last?
I mean, yes. I mean, I don't think it's a tried and true, you know, method, but at the same time, I mean, I sure wouldn't want, you know, people going to other campuses.
It's true.
Because, you know, look, hey, what's your, you know, offer at Tennessee? Oh, okay. We'll go give you this here. And all of a sudden they can just swoop right in, you know, something like it.
Yeah.
Yes and right. No. I don't think it's definite. I don't think it's definite okay. Either way.
Good point.
I'll tell you somebody I'm excited to hear how he performs in the scrimmage because, again, we're not going to see any of it. Going back to that transfer talk, it's going to be Holden Stays because, you know, I think I like this group of transfers to your point. I think Lance Hurd has a chance to be really good. Of course, he's going to be super important for this offense. Man, Hubs, I'm going to continue to beat that drum that we've been beating on. Man, Holden Stays, tight end position, so critical in this offense. Because for the first time in a decade, you don't have Jacob Warren on this roster. Of course, you know, a guy that's been here, done that. You are bringing up a freshman and baptizing him by fire and Ethan Davis, who has all the talent in the world, but he's your most experienced guy at the spot, and you're bringing in this new guy. So I'm intrigued to hear how Holden Stays does in scrimmage. One, knowing that it won't be a finished product, knowing you got to, you know, move on and continue to get better. But that position, that role is going to be so important for this offense. And it's got to hit. No ifs, ands, buts about it. If Holden Stays doesn't hit, then it's going to be that much harder for this offense to get back to where it needs to be and be in a top 10 offense and one of the best scoring offenses in the country.
Yeah, and I think, too, the other thing, AP, is a guy nobody talks about in the transfer portal, and I don't think he's a superstar, but I wonder how much the kid from Alabama that transferred into the tight end position – Can he be a security blanket as your third tight end if somebody's banged up? If, you know what I'm saying? He's a mature guy. He's an older, more veteran guy. Can he step in? Maybe not be dynamic, but is he a forgotten guy that's going to have a role and is going to be counted upon at some point for this team this fall?
He's definitely a forgotten guy because he's down the list when you think about transfers.
Miles Kitzelman. And we'll see. Again, I think it depends on what you're getting out of Ethan Davis, what you're getting out of Holden Stays. I think if those top two ball out, I think Kitzelman will find trouble getting on the field, so to speak. But if any of those stumble, I mean, he's in position.
All right, so Tennessee spring practice, it is ongoing. Scrimmage number one, that is coming up tomorrow. It's going to be an important day, and, of course, we'll be covering it, telling you what we hear, all that and more. We'll tell you what Josh Heupel had to say, all that at VolQuest.com. Hey, before we call it quits here on the VolQuest podcast, I do want to talk a little recruiting. It is decision week coming up later in the next couple of days for in-state defensive lineman, highly touted prospect from Ensworth High School. That is Ethan Utley. Awesome price. Where are you the week of Ethan Utley's decision?
Well, it certainly feels like, you know, Tennessee's got some momentum there. You know, Texas has swung hard, Michigan as well. You know, he's really close with Dylan Lewis, the Tennessee linebacker commit, dating back to his time as a kid in Atlanta. Obviously, George is continuing to work Ethan as a mid-state, you know, private school guy. And so it feels like Tennessee's got some momentum there.
And then you look at this weekend, this past weekend, you and Brent and Matt were over on campus. A lot of guys in and out. A couple of guys that wanted to highlight here, Dasan Brame, Eric Winter, Shady Hayward, to name a few. What do you like about those guys and kind of how they, they took this Tennessee visit, and what do you think their thoughts are leaving campus?
Yeah, we'll start with Brame. Brame, to me, is Tennessee, Oregon. A lot of it, I think, depends on where he wants to play at. Kids from kind of middle of the United States, so he can kind of go either direction. You know, really good-looking prospect, an elite tight end. To potentially pair with Jack Van Doorslayer, the current Tennessee commit, who was here this past weekend as well. As far as Eric Winter, that one, Coach Chop has done a really good job of getting Tennessee in position with him. You know, done a really, really fantastic job. I think Tennessee is surging. Are they the leader? No, I do not believe that, but I think they're a team that's ascending in his recruitment. You know, Auburn, obviously, as the in-state school, is one you have to watch, as well as Georgia and Ole Miss. And then as far as Shady Hayward, Tennessee's been in a really good spot there for a while. You know, Georgia's going to kind of take a swing here, and he's going to take some visits potentially to Alabama and others. But, you know, I think right now, as we said here in late March, Tennessee is positioned well with the young man from Georgia.
You got a scrimmage coming up tomorrow. Probably not a whole lot of visitors are going to be here for that. If I'm wrong, tell me. But also, you got Easter weekend coming up. No one's going to be here. Recruits will start filing back in next week. Who the are some sixth. Of those other? Say what?
The sixth is big. The sixth. Okay. Is big. Pre'Darius Jackson will be here. Douglas Utu, the big offensive tackle out of Las Vegas, the Tennessee's you know, started to make a move for. So yeah, that the weekend of the sixth will be big. And recruiting, and then of course for the spring game, David Sanders, the number one offensive tackle in the country, will be in town from Charlotte.
Plenty going on right now. Brent Hubbs over VolQuest.com. Tennessee's run to through the NCAA tournament on to the Sweet 16 in Detroit. Got Tennessee baseball happening right now, just coming off an SEC a win over Ole Miss this past weekend. Got spring football, got recruiting that never stops. People who are listening to the show right now, we thank you. But if you're not a member, you're missing out. Great, great value over at VolQuest.com right now.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a recruiting fan in particular, I mentioned this over the weekend. I mean, if you weren't around the message board on Saturday, you were missing real-time updates that Austin and Matt were just churning out on the message board. It's the easiest place to drop the notes in there, and they were churning them out real-time as stuff was happening. Stuff like that, right? I mean, notes and – you know, during the middle of basketball games and in baseball games, those threads, just the interaction that we have going on the site during those times is really big. And that's where, you know, we're going to drop things as quick as we can, as, you know, as early as we can, because that's the easiest place to drop them in there for everybody. So you want to be a part and not miss out on those things among all the stories and podcasting and everything else that we do. There's just it's just a great interactive place to hang out. It's comical at times. It can be a little bit maddening at times, but it's the pulse of the Tennessee fan base, right? And it's all the emotions that swing wildly during recruiting and games and everything else. So you want to be a part of that at VolQuest. You don't want to miss out on it.
You could say that, swing wildly during games, you know, the good, the bad. Yeah, you can say that.
It's much like the VolQuest staff group text. Yes.
It is a blast for sure. You want to be there, and it's your number one spot for any Tennessee news and Tennessee conversation. For Austin Price, Brent Hubbs, Rob Lewis, who was with us talking basketball earlier in the show, I am Eric Kane. Thanks so much for being here. Thanks to our friends Exterior Home Solutions for being the presenting sponsor of this show, local and trusted since 1999. Pick up the phone for a free estimate. You can call this number. It's 865-524-5888. Or visit them online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. Appreciate you guys for being here. We'll talk to you Thursday on the Mailbag Podcast. This is VolQuest.com.
You've been listening to the VolQuest Podcast every week here on VolQuest.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.